A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave, medium wave, satellite, and the internet, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, a regular survey of communications developments produced and presented by Diana Jansen and Jonathan Marks.
Yes, another week has flown by, the warmer weather has cleared off as well, and we're now into autumn in this part of the world.
We're going to give away a prize in a few minutes' time, but we start by looking at what's coming in on the answer line.
Hello, Jonathan, Diana. Carl Kroger here from Huntingfield, from the wilds of North Suffolk in England. Quick one in relationship to your broadcast via the Semtex services of South Africa. It's advisable to write to them with your reception reports, as they do very, very nice QSL cards. Believe me, I've got some. And your best person to write to is Kathy Otto, which is Oscar Tango Tango Oscar, Shortwave Services, Semtech, Private Bag, X-ray 06, Honeydew 2040, South Africa. As well, obviously, writing your reception reports to Radio Netherlands. Takes about 3 months, but when they come back, you get some very spectacular pictures of the Semtex site in South Africa.
This is Herman Content from Ghent in Belgium reporting. More information about Radio Aviva on medium wave 1566 kHz medium wave. You can find Radio Aviva on Astra transponder number 55, horizontal polarization, frequency 10.803 gigahertz, audio subcarrier 7.74 megahertz in mono.
Thanks. Also to Chris Stacey in Eastbourne, who notes that the Radio Aviva broadcasts on 1566 kilohertz are coming from a transmitter in Beren Münster. He says that according to the British DX Club, the German language arm of Transworld Radio also has airtime. And now, who's next?
Hello, I'm David Bynan, calling from Swansea in South Wales. I'm calling in for some information for Media Network, some DX programmes I've found, both coming from on Sundays. One of them is from ABC Radio in Denmark, which is at 11.30 UTC on 7570 kHz. And then there was one coming from AWR Radio, which I think is broadcasting from Italy, but I'm not sure. That's on 13590 kHz at 16.30. Answer phones always get me a bit anyway, so there's the information. Anyway, I'd just like to say, sort of carry on with the programme. I've been listening for a couple of years, and it's getting better and better.
Thank you for that. Well, several listeners to Media Network have spotted the appearance of extreme right-wing programming in the German language at 19 hours UTC on a Saturday night. The Voice of Russia has apparently hired airtime to Ernst Zündel for extremely political programmes aired on 1386 kHz, a transmitter in what was called the Kaliningrad area, now called Bolshakovo. This material is an instant flashback to the Goebbels propaganda ministry, if you listen in. And if you've been scanning the dial over the last few days, you may have come across this new tuning signal.
As from October the 7th, the Voice of Russia has started a mini-revolution and officially changed its interval signal and main theme tune, switching to the famous composition Pictures at an Exhibition by the Russian composer Mussorgsky.
So in come the paintings and no more midnight in Moscow.
But as we promised in an earlier programme, it's time to announce the winners of the second round of our Bottom of the Web contest. For those of you who don't have internet access or didn't check our pages recently, there was a little contest at the bottom of the Media Network internet page. You only had to answer three questions to qualify to be picked as the winner. 1. How fast is your www connection? 2. How often do you check out this Media Network page? And 3. What was the site you were looking at before you found the Radio Netherlands website?
Oh, come on, it doesn't really sound like a contest.
That's true. You only had to provide us with information. The idea being that we got your feedback so as to improve our service on the server. For instance, if we discovered that most of the people who look up our pages access the internet with a 9600 baud modem, it doesn't make sense to add a lot of graphics to the text.
I was amazed how many people found that contest at the bottom of the pages. Now, you've been looking through the entries. What did you discover in terms of results?
Well, it turns out that the majority uses a 28.8K modem. ISDN connection comes second and is mostly established via connection at work. What strikes me is that quite a lot of people using 14.4K modems are considering an upgrade to 28.8 or ISDN. And the winner of the contest has access to the internet via the radio. And we also learned that we really have to update the pages frequently, for the vast majority looks up the Media Network pages more than every other week. A considerable amount of people even more than once a week.
Good gracious. Right, time to announce the winner.
Who gets the forthcoming edition of the World Radio TV Handbook, which will be coming out in about a month's time, and that's earlier than usual. Well, the winner of the second round of the Bottom of the Web contest is Gunnar Posnieks. And an email requesting your snail mail address, Gunnar, is on its way. And I would love to hear more about how you access the internet via radio.
Friday through Wednesday, I look at the power lines. But on Thursday, I listen to Media Network.
Grab a long wave radio, because next Wednesday, October 23rd, from 09:45 to 10:15 UTC, a rather unusual long wave station in Grimeton, Sweden, will make its annual brief appearance on the airwaves to broadcast for just 30 minutes. The frequency is 17.2 kHz, indeed 17.2, way down in the long wave region, and the transmission consists of no music, simply Morse code letters SAQ.
And what's interesting is that this station broadcasts without any tubes or solid-state devices. The frequency is generated by an alternator, like what you have in your car, but thousands of times bigger. The station dates from the end of World War I, when there was enormous commercial pressure to get messages across the Atlantic.
The Swedes found a spot that ensured that the entire long-wave propagation path to the receiving station, which was in New York, would run across open water, so south of Norway, north of Denmark and Scotland. Grimeton, a village about 10 kilometres east of Varberg, was therefore considered a suitable choice, and besides, the Americans could pronounce the name.
And the transmitter, better known as an Alexanderson alternator, feeds a total of six 127-metre-high masts, which are still standing, even though the transmitter site is now a radio museum, fired up once a year for enthusiasts.
Now to London, and on Monday, the British Foreign Secretary, Malcolm Rifkin, and the chairman of the BBC Governors, Sir Christopher Bland, met to consider a working group's report on the restructuring of BBC World Service. They announced that the restructuring proposals affecting Britain's radio voice overseas will go ahead, but list 20 extra measures to be taken, which they say will safeguard the station's interests and special character. These include an independent panel to be chaired by a BBC governor, which will advise the Board of Governors on the World Service's performance. Mr. Rifkin and Sir Christopher have also asked the working group to reconvene in autumn of next year, with the help of independent experts, to ensure that the measures are producing the desired results. Opponents of the idea warn that a key ingredient making World Service distinctive, its people, will still be lost, because even under the altered restructuring, the staff will be broken up into different centres. There's an internet website covering further developments on the changes at BBC World Service. It's www.longitudezero.co.uk. The way things look now, BBC World Service will remain in Bush House on the Strand at least until April of 1998. On the lighter note, there's been much speculation as to how much it's going to cost the BBC to simplify its distinctive logo. The rightward-leaning rectangles will be straightened in the future, and the coloured bars underneath the letters BBC will disappear. They were originally meant to stand for the colours of Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. For instance, the BBC Scotland-headed notepaper only has blue stripes under the logo. Some estimates say it'll cost £5 million to implement, but the costs will be ultimately recovered in cheaper printing bills. BBC's Director General John Burt expects to make more than £200 million worth of savings in the BBC budget to finance the overlap years between analogue and digital services. This means efficiency savings of 15 to 20% on the annual budget of £1.8 billion.
And joining us now is a familiar voice for Vintage Media Network listeners. Professor John Campbell drops by in Hilversum from time to time on his travels. Based in London, his field is artificial intelligence and computer science, but his spare time love is shortwave radio. In the past, he's contributed to this program on the subject of clandestine radio. What's been happening since he last appeared on the program?
I've been lying fairly low, but doing my best to hear what clandestine excitement there is. For somebody who's been doing this for 20-odd years, which is my position, I have to say this is not a vintage year. Life tends to be rather boring on the clandestine front. Most of the activity is in the general area of Iraq, Iran, Turkey, you name it. I'm sure you've seen this kind of thing from your news reporting of the area. There are lots of clandestine stations, programs, fake programs, and things of this type from that area. They seem to grow like weeds. But the actual content of the broadcasts out of there are pretty predictable. Again, by comparison with what you would expect to see in the newspapers about the habits of the various factions, and the style of broadcasting is very old-fashioned. The idea of propaganda by radio 50 years ago was very new and very exciting. You could say anything you liked, and the audience would believe it because it came out of the speakers of the radio, and the radio never lies. These days, even the audiences in places like Kurdistan are more sophisticated than that. They get more sources of information, more varied sources, and they're about 50 years more sceptical than the good old days. But the last people to know about this are the broadcasters. Very strange.
Is that because they're not really interested in listeners? They're just doing what the masters tell them to say?
That's partly the story. If you're working for a government organisation with no particular accountability, and also you don't believe very strongly yourself in the quality of government instructions, there's no incentive to get modern. Also, I think if they're looking for techniques or advice for smooth modern propaganda presentation, people who actually train you in more modern behaviour are very difficult to find in that area.
What about Latin America? A lot of the activity that we saw, let's say, 10 years ago around Nicaragua, for instance, that's all disappeared.
That's because of the relative success or the quietening down of the political campaigns that they were running. There are still people interested in political issues, or sort of political, but the main difference between broadcasting then and broadcasting now is that then it was shortwave. Shortwave was the medium. These days, things that do pop up, and there are not very many things, tend to appear on FM for local or semi-local audiences, and shortwave is a back number as far as this is concerned.
Hemen Euskadi irratia, Eusko Erresistentziko gudarien deia. This is Radio Euskadi, the voice of the Basque underground. Next follows a transmission in Spanish and Basque languages.
There are some lovely examples of the use of shortwave in the past. For example, Radio Euskadi that claimed it was broadcasting from somewhere in the Pyrenees, I think I remember rightly, but it actually came from somewhere in Latin America.
Yes, that was very impressive. The QSL card from Euskadi was a very fine old-fashioned photo montage with a fishing boat in the Bay of Biscay and a giant antenna mast. With two problems. First of all, if you put an antenna mast of that size on a boat of that size, it would tip over. Secondly, the thing was at some angle to where it would normally sit on the water anyway. The fellow in charge of photo montage had thumbs all over his hands. That was the picture. The actual fact was that the transmitter was a few kilometres out of Caracas in Venezuela. I know quite a lot about the background to the friends that made available the transmitter power for Euskadi, and it was a very fine, innocent, and in the end, relatively successful operation. I was once in Bilbao as part of a conference on some of the technology I work with, And as part of that exercise, those of us who were presenting foreign lectures were interviewed for television. And it was Euskadi television. I was very impressed to see this logo on the wall behind my head.
What about Asia? I mean, at the moment, Afghanistan's going through a tumultuous time. Do you expect any clandestines there?
Whether any clandestines really show up there for more than one night at a time, I think, depends on the stability of the situation. At the moment, what you're seeing is that the various factions that are winning big, and the ones that are losing big, and there are no stable boundary lines at this moment. I think that may settle down, because the fellows who have taken over the capital recently appear to have run out of steam. For various reasons, they're going to find it a lot more difficult to go north into Tajik territory or to go east. There are other factions sitting happily on that territory, and if the boundaries stabilize, I can imagine stations in one or more of those regions broadcasting at the others and trying to cause some local disturbances. But just at this moment, it's a bit early to talk about something like that. There have been reports of stations with clandestine style for Afghanistan on shortwave, but I must admit I haven't been able to hear any of them. It's all very fragmented at the moment. We've got to wait, I think, to see if the situation stabilizes. Stability there, I think, will mean some clandestine broadcasting, but that won't happen until next year at the earliest. And my impression is that if you are a clandestine operation, disguised as a clandestine, and you're run by a government, you're not as interesting, broadly speaking, either to listeners or to DXs, as something which is run by a bunch of enthusiastic people bottom-up, rather like Radio Venturemos.
Is that also because the media is changing, that if you want to get a particular message out, you're a splinter group trying to get a message across, maybe the internet is more effective than building a shortwave transmitter?
Well, that's certainly true now in terms of numbers that you'd reach. Perhaps not numbers in your immediate audience area, say Venturemos talking to parts of Central America, but if you want to attract the attention of listeners in places which are politically influential, North America, let's say, the internet would be a far more effective way to go than relying on shortwave enthusiasts to hear your message.
Hemos presentado La Voz de Alpha 66 con un mensaje de libertad para el pueblo de Cuba que sufre.
And, of course, around the area of Cuba, there are still stations shouting into Cuban territory, although they're getting a bit old.
Yes, that's very sad. There's almost like a museum now, a radio museum. In the good old days of what I called fantasy clandestines in Florida broadcasting to Cuba, there were stations with a reasonably long lifetime and reasonably consistent visibility. A few of these still survive, I think, run occasionally, not regularly, by rather older gentlemen and sometimes older ladies than the ones who actually ran the stations 20 years ago. But the steam is going out, I think. It's a bit like the situation in Northern Ireland in 1971 and early 1972, where there were all sorts of similar-flavoured medium-wave stations in Belfast and Derry. But after about the first year or so, I think they got rather tired, and the audience, as in the cases we may have talked about before, got their information through other media than radio.
But there has been activity too recently in Colombia.
That's off and on, but it's been around for a while. There are so-called guerrilla groups, like M16, hiding in the jungle, so to speak, who occasionally make the news by kidnapping people working for oil companies. They started off as a Marxist-flavoured, economically determined organisation. There are models like this all over the world. But they seem to have lost their original inspiration. They'd rather go on existing than not exist. And their sources of money are now basically drug money. That's where the money comes from, not anymore from Soviet assistance or other such things like Cuban friends. And anything resembling ideology now seems to have disappeared. They do broadcast from time to time. You hear rumours that they are on shortwave on occasions. At other times you hear that they're on FM. But as far as I know, they don't broadcast regularly. I think it's more a question of saying, we have this equipment, we haven't used it for a while, let's put it on the air again. I doubt if they have any regular listeners.
So, final question, what are you listening to at the moment?
Non-clandestines, I guess. The story in my case is that, where I'm located, it is rather fun to listen on medium wave, would you believe, to North American stations with very long antennas, up to about, in my case, 800 metres, terminated in the local cemetery at the other end of some fields. And the most exciting things of these programmes, you find it difficult to believe, but nevertheless true, are the local commercials. I tend to hunt local commercials from North American broadcasters, which shows that, I suppose, I'm not a classical listener anymore, but this is an amusing game.
And what have you managed to hear?
Well, the more local the commercials, the more exciting they are, because the less effective they are. For example, there was one recorded for a local sports store where sporting music was in the background. And I think the local sports store proprietor had control over the person who ran the mixer, or control over the mixer, and he could not lower the music below a certain level. And so he thought the best thing to operate was by shouting. And whatever happened, he or somebody advanced the music level on the mixer to compensate for the shouting. The shouting would then compensate for the advanced level, and it was very exciting.
But these type of stations are now appearing on the internet too, in Real Audio, for instance. Does that take the thrill out of the radio side?
That depends on what kind of programming is involved. For the rather glossy operations, the ones that run in large markets with large budgets, that's probably true. But then a lot of the act of receiving broadcasting is carried out in places like your pickup truck or your bath or something like this. And it's a bit difficult to run a terminal to the internet in your bath. So if you like that kind of broadcasting, then you'll go along with the broadcast medium and not switch to computing. Generally speaking, the more local the broadcasts, the more likely it is that somebody will tune to those things in the bath. And I think those will not die out.
John Campbell. More from him soon.
Fax the facts to Hilversum 6724239.
John mentioned Afghanistan a few moments ago. Reason then to call Victor Gunatilaka, who can monitor events from that part of the world, from his monitoring post in Sri Lanka. Victor, anything new to report?
Well, Afghanistan is hitting the news, and we've been watching Afghanistan through the medium of a shortwave radio. 2 days after the Taliban forces took over Kabul, Radio Afghanistan's shortwave transmitter reappeared on 7,200 kilohertz, that's 7200 kilohertz, at 0130 UTC. Well, reception, however, is quite difficult due to the Voice of America on 7205 kilohertz to South Asia. However, it's nice to hear Radio Kabul after quite a few weeks, and I think the Taliban has done very well to get the transmitter out in 2 days. Well, the new rulers in Kabul have done away with the age-old tuning signal of Radio Afghanistan. By the way, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan all have somewhat similar-sounding tuning signals. If one tunes to 4975 kHz, that's 4975 kHz at 1R UTC, you could hear the Dari service of the Tajik radio signing on with a clear tuning signal and station identification in Johor, Dushanbe. Well, last month, the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, the PUK, abandoned its headquarters in Sulaymaniyah, and with it, their radio station fell silent. Well, it reappeared briefly around the 18th of September to disappear again. Now, with the PUK regaining its headquarters in Sulaymaniyah, I'm sure we could expect to hear their clandestine voice, the voice of the people of Kurdistan, to reappear any moment. The frequencies they were using before they went off the air were 4105, that's 4105, and 6295 kHz. One would do well to look between 17 hours and 19 hours UTC. By the way, the KDR, the voice of the Iraqi Kurdistan, is still very regular on 4070 kHz, 1615 to 19 hours UTC.
Victor, we mentioned that the Voice of Russia has changed its interval signal earlier in the program. I understand that a station in Asia has actually changed its name.
Oh, yes. Name changes seem to be quite the order of the day, Jonathan. Radio Bangladesh, which comes in with a strong signal in its external service, and that's 1230 to 13 hours UTC, 7185 and 9550 kilohertz. The station has changed its station identification and it no longer uses Radio Bangladesh. Instead, calls itself the external service of Bangladesh Betar. So it's funny, I think they seem to be sticking to the local vernacular name for even the external service in English.
It sounds a bit like Radio Flandre International, I suppose. What else is new in your region?
Well, the Radio Republic Indonesia, they installed some new high-powered transmitters and they're putting in excellent signals here in South Asia. A time to listen to them between 2200 to 15 hours UTC, that's almost right throughout the day here in South Asia. Excellent signals with some beautiful Indonesian music, 9630 kilohertz, 9680, 11785 and 15150 provide excellent reception here in South Asia.
Victor, thanks for joining us. Talking of new transmitters, our mention of the Thomson Shortwave Transmitter Company and their plans for digital tests has prompted a number of reactions from listeners in Europe, all of them sporting the same cutting from the new programme schedule from RAI, the Italian state broadcasting service based, of course, in Rome.
RAI's international division has traditionally put most of its effort into television broadcasts directed at Italian communities living abroad. Now, by the end of the year, RAI will complete a special international network using satellites such as the AsiaSat 2 and EchoStar to broadcast the best of Italian language, radio and TV. In some cases, such as with EchoStar, viewers need a decoder and to pay a subscription of $10 a month to see the programs. In the meantime, 11,000 hours of programming a year in 27 languages currently come from a rather small shortwave transmitting center at Prato Smeraldo, not far from Rome. Over the years, houses have been built very close to the transmitter site. Now, power restrictions have been put on the use of what's there, and there's no room to expand.
RAI says it will now purchase a series of 500 kilowatt transmitter antenna combinations being marketed by Thomson for use at a new and yet undisclosed transmitter site. Funding has been approved in stages.
RAI is also upgrading its internet pages at www.rai.it. And another upgrade has happened in Canada. Radio Canada International now has extracts of its transmissions in real audio available on its revamped site at www.rcinet.ca. Canada is also the home of the French language website being run for Africa Number 1, which broadcasts from Libreville in Gabon. The web address for them is www.sit.ca/Africa.
Well, keep your calls coming into the Media Network office either via the answer line, email or snail mail and the fax machine. And we're especially interested at the moment in technical questions connected with receivers and antennas.
And for the moment, that's all. We hope you'll be with us next week. In the meantime, from the team around the world and Jonathan and myself here in Hilversum, have a sunny weekend.
For input on Media Network's output, just reach for a pen or start up the computer. Copyright 1996.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.